And why would we want our Republican candidate for president and potential president beholden to one person who made him a $500 million gift and or loan? That's theater of the absurd.
Welcome to the Powers That Be Daily, Puck's podcast focused on the intersection of Wall Street, Washington, Silicon Valley, and Hollywood, and the players who run it all. I'm Peter Hamby. It's Friday, March 22nd. Today, I'm joined by Bill Cohan to break down Donald Trump's inability to come up with the $454 million bond payment he owes to the state of New York, thanks to the ruling in the fraud case against him and the Trump Organization. Can Trump figure out a way to come up with the money by Monday? Can the state of New York start seizing his properties like Trump Tower and 40 Wall Street? And could Donald Trump do the unthinkable, declare bankruptcy? Bill is here to explore all the angles. And later, Teddy Schleifer joins Ben to discuss how Mark Zuckerberg's billionaire college roommate, Dustin Moskovitz, could be unleashing his checkbook in the 2024 election. We'll discuss all that and much, much more on today's episode of The Powers That Be. Are you tired of sleeping hotter than hell? I sure am. I sleep hot. There's something crucial about sleep that eludes us when we're too warm, too uncomfortable, and too caught in the web of our own thoughts to drift off. And while curiosity fuels our days, science tells us that cool sleep recharges our nights. That's where Chili Pad by SleepMe comes in. Meet the bed cooling system that elevates the quality of human life through cool sleep. The Chili Pad bed cooling system is your new bedtime solution. I love it. It lets you customize your sleeping environment to your optimal temperature, ensuring you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. Chili Pad works with your existing mattress. It's a water-based mattress topper that continuously controls your bed temperature from 55 to 115 degrees, allowing your body to rest and recover. This isn't just about escaping the heat, it's also about optimizing your sleep for better health, more energy, and improved physical and cognitive performance, which I obviously need hosting a podcast. Chili Pads are designed for one or two sleepers, so if your sleep partner likes to sleep at a different temperature, or you only need it for one side of the bed, that's okay too, and we know that's crucial. Plus, you can schedule automated temperature changes to trigger deep sleep. But when I'm at home, Chili Pad solves those problems. So trust me on this one. Visit sleep.me/powers to get your Chili Pad and save up to $315 with code POWERS. This offer is available exclusively for Powers That Be listeners and only for a limited time. Order it today with free shipping and try it out for 30 days. You can return it for free if you don't like it with their sleep trial. Visit www.sleep.me/powers because you're not just investing in better sleep, you're creating a better life. Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Powers That Be. I'm joined today by Bill Cohan to talk about Donald Trump struggling to come up with the money to pay the bond, basically to pay off the judgment in the New York fraud case. But Bill, I also want to talk to you about today's very important matchup between the Duke Blue Devils, your team, and the Vermont Catamounts. Every other year, it feels like Vermont shoots the lights out, and a 4-13 seed. I don't know, man. I don't know what the Vegas odds are, but are you feeling good about tonight?
Well, I think we're predicted to win, but you never know. This team is high beta. Sometimes they blow out teams. Sometimes they don't show up. You'd think they will show up for this first round match. I got to be able to hold my head up at least parallel to the ground on Tobacco Road, Peter. If they go out in the first round, I'm going to be like hanging my head low. So I'm hoping they can make it through the first round, maybe even the second. But then I think it's lights out when Houston shows up. So we'll see. I'll be watching. Yeah.
The rebirth of Phi Slamajama is very compelling. Yeah, I just, whatever. If I was you, I'd be a little worried about the Vermont Catamounts. But, maybe everyone's
going to pick
that.
Believe me. I'm worried. They don't have anybody taller than 6'9". So potentially, we could have a height advantage. But, You're right. They get hot, we get cold, it's all over.
Okay, so I want to ask you about, this is Judge Arthur Engoron's ruling last month, basically found that the Trump family, not just Donald, but Eric and Don Jr., Trump Organization, engaged in a decades-long conspiracy to lie about the value of their assets. In New York, if you make money by committing fraud, you have to pay that back plus interest. That's $350 million in this case, plus interest, $454 million that Donald Trump owes to the state of New York by Monday. They said they've gone out to 30 different companies. No one's going to put up this money. I mean, he's also got to pay, or has already set aside $100 million to pay E. Jean Carroll in that case. So the thinking is he's got to sell one or several of his properties because that's where his value is all tied up. Like, where does he go from here?
Well, he's going to the New York appeals court. He's appealing, you know, I guess to the court to try to either reduce the amount that he has to put up for a bond to something like $100 million, which I guess he could do. And he's also appealing for more time. The New York Attorney General, Letitia James, came out today and said, yeah, that's all a bunch of hogwash. You should ignore that. So one path he has is the Court of Appeals, whether he can convince them. I can't imagine a New York State Court of Appeals is going to let him give him any wiggle room, but they might. Okay, so assuming that doesn't happen, he can't get a bond. He can't get a bond because he's a lousy credit risk and has been for a long time and stiffs his lawyers, stiffs his subcontractors, stiffs his contractors, stiffs his banks. So, you know, why should anybody in their right mind, even for a fee? Because, you know, if you become the bonding agent here, you take the risk, right? You have to pay if he loses the appeal, the bonding agent makes the payment to New York State and then has to go after Donald to get that money. You want to, be in that relationship with him where he's a known skinflint and doesn't pay his debts as they become due? No one in their right mind is going to do that. I was surprised Chubb even did it, or a subsidiary of Chubb did it in the case of E. Jean Carroll, but that, you know, who knows what collateral he promised there. So that's why nobody's doing that. So then what does he do? Well, I mean, he's got, what, 5 days or something to sell 40 Wall Street or what's not already sold in Trump Tower or Mar-a-Lago or the Doral Golf Club or some of his other golf clubs. None of that's going to happen. I mean, he should have been anticipating this for months, right? I mean, this is obviously right. Quite foreshadowed. So if he hasn't, you know, he's so delusional, he probably thought it might not happen or no one would have the guts to do this and he would somehow wiggle out of it, and he still might with the Court of Appeals. But I don't see how any deal that he cuts between now and Monday to sell a building and actually get money to trade hands is going to be at a severely distressed price. The minority positions that he has in the two buildings, one on Avenue of the Americas, one in San Francisco, that are owned majority by Vornado, they're not going to be sold. You know, and if he does try to sell his minority position in those buildings, he's going to take a severe haircut. So that's not going to be good. Potentially, you know, Truth Social merging into DWAC or DWAG, whatever it is, that SPAC. Yeah, that could be potentially, you know, worth, you know, several billion dollars on paper to him. That could be interesting collateral, except that merger has not been approved yet. And even when it is approved, he'd be locked up for 6 months. And there are several lawsuits that are going to try to delay that merger from happening anyway. So I'm sure that's not collateral that any. And SPAC equity is a joke to begin with. And I'm sure once the merger takes place, it'll trade down. And I can understand why nobody would want that as collateral. Could one of his rich billionaire friends come in and make him a loan? Yes. And then you would know better than I, Peter. He would run afoul of the Federal Election Commission rules on donations because, you know, a $500 million donation to one candidate is probably against the rules, if not the law.
It's certainly frontiers of campaign finance law. I mean, you know, typically a rich donor would give money to your campaign or a super PAC or, you know, nonprofit group to help you run for president. But in this case, it would just literally just be like a favor, like a personal favor, like here's a loan or a grant. And I think because he's a candidate, it would run afoul of campaign finance laws, but it would certainly be challenged.
He's a Republican candidate for president.
Yeah.
And why would we want our Republican candidate for president and potential president beholden to one person who made him a $500 million gift and or loan? That's totally theater of the absurd.
Exactly. So here's a question. I don't know which of Trump's properties like are more valuable than others or which ones are more vulnerable to this, but could the state of New York, could the AG like seize any of Trump's properties?
Sure. And I'm sure that's exactly what she would do. I mean, she would probably start with his bank. You know, he said in his deposition, you know, in April of 23 that he had $400 million in cash and growing every day. That's probably a lie, because if he really did, then he would be putting that up already as collateral and get him, you know, 90% of the way where he needs to be. So that was obviously a lie, quel surprise. But I'm sure the AG would first go after his bank accounts, then his brokerage accounts. That's all, you know, theoretically liquid. Then what? Then, you know, if I were her, I would definitely go after 40 Wall Street. I'm sure there's some sort of mortgage on it, and it's not worth what he says. But talk about, you know, a show of force and headlines and everything. Definitely. I mean, Trump Tower, what does he really own there? He owns his condo, and he owns, I guess, some of the lobby and maybe another condo or two or something that he hasn't sold. But, you know, the rest of it is kind of sold off. You know, he's got, I mean, Mar-a-Lago. I mean, sure, I'd love to see her seize Mar-a-Lago. I don't know whether the New York State Attorney General can seize assets in Florida. Maybe not. So she may have to, you know, keep her seizing to New York State assets. There's his estate, you know, in Westchester, which was once owned by, you know, the guy who bought the Washington Post out of bankruptcy once upon a time. You know, so that's pretty nice property. You know, I don't know what it's worth. I don't know what anybody would pay for it, especially in a distressed sale. So that could get him some cash. I'm sure he doesn't care about that. He doesn't care about, you know, the Truth Social stock. If, in fact, you know, that all merger happened and he waited 6 months and blah, 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 blah. He could probably use that as collateral if the merger were to happen. But, you know, who knows? That's like a next month thing at the earliest. Look, I don't know what the hell he does. I wouldn't want to be him, and I wouldn't want to be him with all of his, you know, his reputation for stiffing creditors. Why would anybody take a risk on this guy? Except for maybe the Saudis or the Russians.
Exactly. That's what it would have to be at this point, which, again, would raise huge red flags, I think, legally in terms of the campaign. I saw you the other day on my favorite CNN show, Inside Politics, with Dana Bash, and you suggested something that would seem, you know, pretty crazy for a guy who is, you know, so egotistical and proud of all his money and accomplishments. You suggested that he might have to file for bankruptcy, or he might file for bankruptcy. Like, how likely would that be?
I think it's his only choice at this point. You know, the only way he's going to, unless the Court of Appeals comes through for him and reduces the amount of what he has to pay or the bond or gives him more time. Again, I don't see a New York State Court of Appeals doing that for this guy. Why should they? But they might. So if that happens, okay, that's one way. If that doesn't happen, then he's out of luck, and he's going to have to file for personal bankruptcy, because that way he can stay the judgment, stay any asset sales, buy himself a whole lot of time. You know, this thing going into bankruptcy court would definitely buy him time. Maybe a year, maybe 2 years. It's like a free fall bankruptcy. Who knows what kind of mess he's got there. And you know, he could. And then, you know, the state of New York becomes a general unsecured creditor of the Trump organization or of Donald Trump personally, whatever ends up being the debtor here. And you know, who knows where they would fall or what kind of recovery they would get. That's probably his best way of reducing the size of the judgment. It's his best way of having like an orderly sale of his assets. You know, he will lose them, but he will lose the assets. Absolutely. You know, he'll have to pay the judgment, but it would all be done in a much more timely, slower, more orderly way than in the next 5 days.
I know that Democrats and the left are worried about Donald Trump winning this year. They're terrified. But just as you head into the weekend, have a cocktail, take comfort in the fact that this was your dream in 2017, 2018. It's finally coming true. The courts are exposing Donald Trump as a fraud in certain cases and making him pay up. And he is being shown to not have the money that he always bragged about. Like, if you were watching Rachel Maddow in 2017 and this was on the news, you would love it. So just take a deep breath.
And the irony is so rich here, Peter, because, you know, he overinflated the value of his assets, right? He was held accountable for that by, the New York State Attorney General. Now he's having to pay $450+ million as a penalty for that kind of behavior, and he can't get the loan that he needs to make that judgment because he overinflated the value of the assets and they aren't worth what he said they were worth. So it's all circular and ironic and meta, and, you know, for those who love justice and want to see this guy get what he deserved and has deserved for a long time, this is a beautiful moment. Whether he becomes president or not, again, which would be, I think, tragic for the country, this is a beautiful moment. So enjoy it.
Bill, good luck tonight. I will be watching to see how many Vermont players Kyle Filipowski trips.
Trips.
We'll see.
That's right. Okay. All right. Good luck to UNC. They'll be, you know, first number one seed to lose to a play-in team. I don't think that's
I'm not a Carolina fan. I'm not a Carolina fan. None of my teams are in it this year. I think I'm going to be rooting for Marquette, my mom's alma mater. Go Shaka. That's what I got. Bill.
Yeah, we like Shaka. All right. Thank you.
When we come back, Teddy Schleifer is here to talk about billionaire Dustin Moskovitz and how he's trying to influence the 2024 election. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. See how you profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/powersthatbe, netsuite.com/powersthatbe. That's netsuite.com/powersthatbe.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter your search based on the qualities that are most important to you. Then you can book a free 15-minute consultation call with any therapist you're interested in seeing, so you can get a feel for whether they're the right fit before you commit to a full-length session. Alma also makes it easy for mental health care providers to navigate insurance. That's why 95% of therapists in their directory accept insurance for sessions, so you can find care that's affordable without stressing about the paperwork. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy60 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy60.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Ben Landy here with Teddy Schleifer. Thanks for being here, Teddy.
Sure thing, Ben. You know, you're just dragging me away from day one of the March Madness tournament, which I'm totally not watching as I record this podcast, in all seriousness.
We'll let you get back to it immediately after this. Teddy, you have been writing a lot this cycle about the rightward political turn or red pilling of Silicon Valley over the last few years. And we talk a lot less about the industry's many mega billionaires who are still hardcore Democrats or at least hardcore anti-Trump. But you had some new reporting this week that I thought was particularly interesting about Dustin Moskovitz, who looks like he could be a really major late player in the general election for Team Biden. You've been following his movements for a while, so I'll just hand you the mic. What have you uncovered into looking into why Dustin could be so important this election?
So Ben, I've been fascinated with Dustin ever since 2016, which is when the Facebook co-founder wrote this Medium post. I think it was September 9th, 2016. I remember where I was when I saw it, as do lots of people, saying that he felt compelled to get involved in politics for the very first time because he was scared of Donald Trump. And he committed like 20 or 30 million bucks to beating Trump. And it kind of came out of nowhere. Because if you talk to people who are friends with Dustin Moskovitz, ever since the Facebook days, they never detected a political bone in his body. And over the next 8 years, as I've been kind of chronicling Dustin's involvement, he's only gotten more and more and more involved in big money Democratic politics. So in our story up on Puck this week, we look at his 2024 plan, which appears to be the first time to me, at least in my 8 years of covering him, that he is kind of like playing the game as it's meant to be played. And what I mean by that is he is finally like leaning into the fact that he is a mega donor. And as a mega donor, he can get access and try to achieve policy objectives that are important to him. Then that's just kind of the way the game works. So, and the best example of this is that we report last month, Dustin Moskovitz met one-on-one with Joe Biden to talk about a policy area, AI, that is very important to Dustin. And obviously Joe Biden is meeting with Dustin Moskovitz because he's a huge Democratic donor. And like, that's not a scandal. That's just the way the world works, right? And Dustin, though, had never met Joe Biden before, even though he donated, you know, probably over $100 million to help elect Joe Biden 4 years ago. I know this all sounds obvious, like that you get access in exchange for making these contributions, but Dustin, for, you know, as long as I've been writing about him, has been hostile to like playing the game. And finally, at least as of, you know, this recording, he appears willing to like be an Eric Schmidt-like figure who, you know, is an insider who can try to push for his policy objectives in exchange for his money. So there's been an evolution in Dustin over the last 8 years that I find fascinating. I'm sure, you know, lots of Democrats, anecdotally, I've been hearing from lots of Democrats over the last 72 hours since we published this piece, all of them are amazed that Dustin would even take a meeting with Joe Biden, which just shows you how ridiculous it is that Dustin's never done this before, because usually if you want to meet with the President of the United States, you know, but Dustin does not want to, and until now.
Yeah, Teddy, I thought that was an aspect of your piece that was so interesting, that here's a guy who has so much money, he's got the potential to be so influential, but for the most part, I mean, with the exception of, you know, these past election cycles where he did sort of ambivalently give a large amount of money to Democrats, to Hillary Clinton, and then even more to Joe Biden, he is kind of skeptical of the influence of money in politics. He shies away from exercising that power himself. Now, this is also a guy, as you report, who is a truly high-profile, effective altruist. He's one of the guys who's still sort of carrying the torch of that movement after Sam Bankman-Fried imploded and kind of dragged down the reputation of that philosophy with him. You mentioned that obviously the ostensible reason that Dustin met with Biden is to talk about artificial intelligence, but I also wonder if preventing Trump from being elected is sort of at a similarly high level, or maybe even a higher level in his mind, in terms of a existential threat that he might be trying to forestall as a sort of outgrowth of his effective altruist view of the world.
Yeah, the interplay between politics and effective altruism is fascinating. So if you are a mega donor or, you know, a billionaire who has a dollar to spend, the question that an effective altruist would ask is, how should I spend this dollar? They know that they don't want to spend it on a yacht because that doesn't have, you know, the greatest good for the greatest number. If people remember their college philosophy class about utilitarianism. But, you know, the dollar that you could be spending on giving a dollar to someone on the street, or giving a dollar to try to curb factory farming, which is a big passion of Dustin's and lots of other kind of animal welfare advocates in effective altruism, or spending a dollar on foreign aid, or spending a dollar on researching the next pandemic. Or and this is the political twist on this, spending that dollar to elect somebody that can do all of those things, right? You spend a dollar to elect somebody who will increase foreign aid, or spend a dollar to elect somebody who will actually take on kind of big agriculture, or spend a dollar on someone who will make sure there is not, you know, nuclear proliferation. And that sort of is the question in EA, kind of, that's debated ad nauseum on message boards and at EA conferences, and, you know, as in this whole entire subculture, is whether or not it is good to be involved in politics, whether or not it is effective, and there's better ROI to spend your dollar on like a Joe Biden campaign ad versus spending that dollar on, you know, actually more directly addressing the policy question at hand. So Dustin's team literally does that analysis. They will say, like, well, you know, if we spend this $1 in you know, Arizona to try to give, you know, registered Joe Biden voters, that will, you know, increase the chance of a Biden victory by, you know, 0.736948%, while, and that could lead to, you know, 35 chickens not being killed. Right. Or should we spend that dollar not in Arizona, but, you know, on something else that can help save the chicken, right? Or I'm making a joke of this, but there's also this, like, you know, faux science or mirage of objectivity and mirage of math, frankly, that, you know, people in this world do believe that you have a reasonable or a fair expectation that you should try your best to answer these questions. And that's sort of where is how Dustin's team thinks about it. Like, they have literal spreadsheets about this question, about what you should spend the dollar on. And that is very driven in part by what other people are spending their dollar on. So, you know, for instance, the reason why Dustin Moskovitz's team in 2020 and in 2024, as I report in the story, is very invested in particular in late television. And what I mean by that is, like, spending money on television ads at the last possible second. And the reason why is because they want to know what other people are spending their money on. Like, if Dustin Moskovitz realizes that, you know, someone else is going to spend their $1 on, you know, registering or turning out a voter in Arizona, like, then their dollar doesn't need to be spent on that. Maybe their dollar should be spent on something else entirely. So they want to make the decision at the last possible moment is sort of part of how they're thinking about things. I want to talk to you about AI at some point, Ben, because that is overhanging all of this for Dustin. And, you know, I think that's the policy area that he is thinking about a lot when he's assessing political giving.
Well, sure. Let's get into that a little bit, because I was going to say, you know, Dustin, in addition to all these things you've mentioned, is also the sort of rare public advocate in the industry, at least among his peer set, for the idea that Elon Musk is not just a little bit crazy, but he's actually a downright dangerous person in the United States in terms of sort of some of the more poisonous viewpoints he's begun to espouse on Twitter about immigrants and about race, but also Elon's influence in artificial intelligence. He also has a sort of personal beef with Marc Andreessen, another guy who is really important in the field of AI and pushing that forward.
Yeah.
How much of his animus towards Musk and Andreessen in particular is around this AI issue, and how much of it is just sort of a personal distaste for their politics?
I think it's some of both. I mean, Elon is an interesting, you know, character in the AI debate, because he's somewhere in the middle, right, of Marc Andreessen and Dustin. You know, Elon has funded things alongside Dustin for a really long time, and they're kind of in the same broader social circle of kind of Burning Man tech people who kind of came up around the same time. Marc Andreessen is also somebody who's been very close to Dustin. You know, Asana, which is Dustin's current post-Facebook company, was funded at one of its early rounds of funding was led by Andreessen Horowitz. You know, it is an Andreessen portfolio company still, but Mark has really pissed off Dustin in a way that is highly unusual for kind of a mild-mannered, you know, nerdy Jewish guy from Florida. And Dustin sees himself sort of as being caricatured by Marc Andreessen. You know, so if Mark is the leader of the, you know, AI accelerationism movement, this belief that, you know, all these annoying regulators and naysayers and doomers are, you know, crippling American innovation, Dustin is the other pole in that debate. And, you know, he has a lot of influence in Washington, Dustin does. And, you know, his charitable enterprise is, you know, is a big player in politics and in the AI safety debate. And, you know, the fact that Dustin Moskovitz is meeting with Joe Biden, as we report in this story, sort of confirms Mark Andreessen's suspicions that, like, you know, all of these doomers are have too much power and we need to fight against them. And in fact, after our story came out, Ben, you know, Andreessen was tweeting about, you know, why is Dustin meeting with Biden? And this is, it was interesting to Mark Andreessen. And that's sort of are the two sides of this debate. And, you know, I think one of my favorite parts of the story we published this week is there is an Andreessen Horowitz CEO listserv, which is, you know, mostly people fluffing up Mark and, you know, internal announcements and debates about, you know, or just kind of chatter among a peer group of Andreessen CEOs, which Dustin Moskovitz is on because he's an Andreessen CEO, even though it's now a public company. I guess he still has access to the list. And after Mark's most recent essay came out about techno-optimism and about AI and accelerationism and how all of these mean effective altruists are hurting his portfolio companies, blah, 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 Dustin got into this like pretty intense, caustic, at times like emotional debate with all these other Andreessen portfolio company CEOs. And I can quote from one of the emails here, you know, he says, this is Dustin, I consider myself a techno-optimist as well, but to go all the way to this extreme is unreasonable and unethical. Do you really wish to abdicate your responsibility entirely? You know, he's really going after Mark Andreessen, saying that if you guys don't want to have a discussion about AI ethics, quote, I'll take my cue to bow out of this community for good. And then another point, he tells a different Andreessen CEO, I'm so fucking sick of skeptics telling me not to believe my lying eyes. And I can go on and on about what Dustin was saying in the emails, but it's just like he is, you know, taking a match and, you know, lighting the Andreessen CEO list on fire. And it's really, really just shows, you know, I guess you could say his passion on this issue for sure, but it just shows how pissed off he is at kind of the backlash, I think, to EA that Mark Andreessen is leading.
Yeah. And by the way, Teddy, I find it really interesting how this issue has become polarized. And I don't think it like naturally trends in that direction, that the Democrats are going to be the sort of pro-regulatory party on artificial intelligence and that Republicans are going to be the party of unleashing AI on the world with no guardrails. I mean, at the same time, you've got a lot of Republicans who are deeply skeptical of Silicon Valley and technology companies and their influence on social media and the world. And you've got Democrats like Joe Biden, who, you know, he may be sympathetic to Dustin's arguments, but he's also a guy who is pushing his own sort of industrial policy, wanting to build big microchip factories in throughout the United States, who wants to compete with China and go toe-to-toe on AI development. So, you know, we'll see how this stuff plays out. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily going to evolve in the way that we think, but certainly seems like Dustin has a view of how it could go, and he wants to have a finger on the scale of these regulatory regimes and the administrations that are in charge of them.
Yeah, I mean, we did a story at Puck, Ben, you'll remember, like 2 or 3 weeks ago about Mark and sort of how he was kind of asserting his influence in Washington. And now I sort of see this Dustin piece as sort of the companion. And, you know, it's funny. There's a lot of interest in the, I'll put it this way without revealing too much of kind of the, how the sausage gets made in journalism. But like, I'll tell you, there's a lot of interest from the Dustin people in Mark and vice versa. Like they clearly see the other side as a foil. And I guess it's not really that proprietary to share that. I mean, you can just look, even this past weekend, Andreessen was like, you know, tweeting publicly about Dustin's like, you know, philanthropic structure. And I do find all this kind of funny because technically, Ben, it is against Andreessen Horowitz's policy to criticize a entrepreneur in their portfolio, which Mark Andreessen seems to be violating. So technically that is a fireable offense at A16Z. So we are looking to see Mark's resignation letter any minute now.
Yeah, I'm sure it's coming any second now. Teddy, thanks so much for joining us. We got to leave it there, but this was fascinating as always. Thanks for being here.
You bet.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of The Powers That Be. As a reminder, The Powers That Be is the official podcast of Puck. We'd like to thank Ben Landy, Liz Goff, and Alex Bigler for their editorial and production guidance. If you like what you hear, please share with a friend. It really helps us keep delivering the inside scoop that only Puck can offer. Follow us on Twitter at Puck News. I'm Ben Landy. See you tomorrow. This has been a presentation of Odyssey. Please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes wherever you get your podcasts. The Powers That Be Daily is executive produced by John Kelly, co-founder of Puck, Bob Tabador, and Ben Landy, executive editor at Puck.